This podcast is sponsored by the FG Barnes Group, with showrooms in Canterbury and Maidstone, offering a range of new and approved used cars, including MG, Seat and Vauxhall. Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Thursday, May the 5th. The former owners of one of Kent's most famous hotels have gone on trial, accused of cheating the taxpayer out of nearly £500,000. Our business editor, Chris Britcher, joins me now. Chris, this relates to the Grand in Folkestone.
That's right. And if you don't know the town, let me just describe the hotel for you. It's a very impressive building on the seafront that was built in 1899 and boasts four-star boutique accommodation, three restaurants, two bars and has extensive banqueting facilities. It was listed as one of the best places in the county to visit and has even attracted royalty in the past, with Edward VII known to have stayed there.
So what's alleged to have happened?
Well, the venue used to be owned by 74-year-old Michael Stainer and his 60-year-old wife Doris. They're accused of applying tax deductions to the wages of 50 employees between April 2011 and April 2015 and pocketing the cash rather than passing it on to HMRC. A court's been told the alleged fraud totaled more than £473,000. The jury was also told that HMRC officers had visited the hotel in January 2015 and Mr. Stainer had claimed he didn't run the business, instead saying it was owned by the employees. However, records on Company House show that at the time of the visit, Mr. Stainer was the director of the Grand and Mrs. Stainer was the company secretary. While at the hotel, officers took away documents, computers and hard drives.
And what have prosecutors said about what was found within those?
They say it shows a substantial amount of money moving between the Grand and the defendant's personal accounts. It's claimed the majority went into Doris Stainer's bank account, but in a police interview, she said she had nothing to do with the accounts. It's also alleged money was used to prop up the mortgage repayments on properties they owned. The pair, who are both from Folkestone, deny cheating the public revenue and fraud by false representation. The trial continues.
Chris, thank you ever so much. We will, of course, continue to keep you updated as, Chris says, that trial continues.
Kent Online News.
Next today, we can hear from a Medway mum who's calling for more CCTV to be installed at a cemetery where her baby's grave has been repeatedly vandalised. Lily Mae Spring was stillborn 8 years ago and was laid to rest at Woodland Cemetery in Gillingham. Her mum, Shannon, says the damage being done is heartbreaking. Well, she started a petition, which already has hundreds of signatures, and she's been speaking to our reporter Juliana.
She's been in the cemetery now for 8 years. The first time it happened was within a couple of weeks of her being laid to rest, and then gradually it's just been every other week or every other month. Sometimes it could be months and months before something happens, that Lily's grave gets destroyed, stuff gets broken, stuff gets smashed and then dumped. Flowers get ripped up, cards, sentimental things like little ornaments that I buy or family buys. But recently it's just got to a point where it's happening a lot more. It's not just my baby's grave, it's my friends, it's other people's loved ones in there. You know, things like recently what's happened, her big ornament that's been there for 7 years, not one bit of rust in it, nothing, it's still like new. Smashed the pieces. We found it at the top end of the cemetery in the bushes by the alleyways. Flowers ripped up, her recent cards that were put down ripped up, teddies ripped up. It's just everything we seem to be put on at the minute, it's just getting wrecked.
And you're trying, obviously, with your petition to get like at least five cameras to at least try to cover the area that her grave is.
Yeah, we're going to try with the petition. We're trying to push for cameras on all exits and entrances, and if other people are willing to, we're trying to get cameras looking over all of the rest of, like all the people resting there, not just because of my personal experiences, but because everyone else has come forward, like on the petition, that they put loved ones there, they're worried about their loved ones resting places. It's just to put our minds at rest as well as other people's.
What would be your message to those people doing these horrible things, not only to your baby's grave, but to so many loved ones that just want to be resting peacefully at the cemetery?
My words to them, if you can call them people with feelings, doing this sort of thing is, think how you would feel if that was someone doing that to your loved one that had passed, someone who you care about, someone who you miss, think of those people that you're hurting doing this.
Are you hopeful that this will be sorted and perhaps the people responsible will be caught?
I'm hoping so. I'm not holding faith. I'm not. But I am going to be hopeful that something will be done, or these people that have done it come forward off their own back. All I can do is hope and pray that something does come out of this petition. They do put the cameras in, whether people are worried about their privacy or not. As I've stated before, I'd rather them watch me looking over my baby's grave than standing there with no security, nothing to, you know, for this to happen again. It might not be my baby's next time, it might be somebody else's, but next time, what if it is my baby again and it's her headstone? Something that's more value to replace. Not that money comes into it. I don't care how much it costs, but I have to keep replacing it, but I shouldn't have to keep replacing something that's down there for life.
Well, police would like to hear from anyone with information about the damage caused. You can also read this story and find a link to that petition at Kent Online. A Maidstone man's been charged following a sex attack at a nightclub. A 20-year-old woman is reported to have been targeted in Portsmouth at the weekend. The 24-year-old suspect has appeared before magistrates and is due back in court later this month. Elsewhere, a court's heard how a woman drove off after hitting a schoolboy with her car on a zebra crossing in Canterbury. The 14-year-old was left with a broken leg after being knocked down by the BMW on St Stephen's Road in January 2020. Natalie Parker, who's 24 and from High Street Road in Faversham, waited 2.5 hours before calling the police. She's now been fined and given points on her licence. A builder's merchant has been fined £400,000 after two workers were injured in Margate. One of them was hit on the head and the other suffered life-changing leg injuries when sheets of metal mesh slipped off a forklift at the Jewson site. The parent company admitted failing to provide instruction, training and supervision to protect the welfare of its employees. A fundraising page has been set up to help the family of a cyclist who was killed in a crash near Faversham. Tributes are being paid to 19-year-old Cavan, who died after being hit by a car on Lower Road in Tenham in the early hours of Monday. Money donated will help pay for funeral costs. Five people have been arrested over the collision.
This podcast is sponsored by the FG Barnes Group, with car dealerships in Canterbury and Maidstone.
Polls are open for voters in Maidstone and Tunbridge Wells as local elections take place. The results will decide which councillors will represent the areas. You have until 10 tonight to cast your ballot, with results being announced tomorrow. A wildlife park near Canterbury is considering legal action over videos claiming to show animals being kept in poor conditions. Someone posted footage of chimpanzees and moon bears on TikTok after visiting the site in Wingham. While bosses have told Kent Online it's malicious and insist the animals are well looked after. Two P&O Ferries agency workers say they were sacked without notice for not speaking English well enough. The men from South America were hired as chefs on the Pride of Kent after 800 workers lost their jobs last month. They've now also been fired. The company says they were treated in accordance with their contracts and had their return flights paid for. Now, the Kent Online podcast has been told some NHS staff in Kent have anxiety and are struggling to sleep as a result of the work they've been doing during the pandemic. Workers are being encouraged to speak about how they're feeling and get help if necessary. An online portal has been set up so they can self-refer, while psychologists and therapists are now based in hospitals. A special bus is also visiting hospitals in the county with experts on board. Well, I've been speaking to Dr. Lona Lockerbie from the Kent and Medway Wellness Service.
Well-being in the workplace is a real issue, and by promoting and supporting and helping people's well-being, not only does it make people feel good and okay, but it keeps them in the workplace and it enables them to carry on going to work and delivering a good service. So it's very important.
Do you think maybe it's something that could have been done sooner? Because, you know, a lot of healthcare staff, whether they be in our hospitals or clinics, I mean, they're seeing sometimes difficult things every day, aren't they? But do you think maybe the pandemic was perhaps a catalyst for something that could have been done a while ago?
Oh, sure. Definitely a catalyst. I mean, there've always been a staff support services within the NHS and people access them, but this is something extra. And certainly it's no longer a nice, it's a definite must have in the workplace.
workplace.
And I know you've had the bus already going around to various hospitals in the county. For those who come along, what sort of things are they saying to you?
We've got a mix. So some people just want to come along and have a drink and a refreshment, and they just say it's really nice to get off of the wards, to get out of the hospital. But there's others who come to the bus who are telling us they're in need of help, they're anxious, they're having panic attacks, they're not sleeping, and that actually they're going to the GP is too big a step. But actually coming onto the bus, which has no stigma, it's a nice environment, it's much easier. And then they can ask for a bit of help, and then they can refer into our services if appropriate.
How much is this trying to avoid another crisis within the health service, where we end up with an awful lot of people, as you say, potentially off work because they're struggling to cope mentally with what they've had to deal with over the past couple of years?
Oh yeah, this would be a key part of trying to avoid that situation. And as I've said, keeping and promoting staff's well-being is really important in keeping staff in the work, in the workplace, but also in keeping staff feeling supported, valued, and keeping well.
And I guess for staff who are struggling, I mean, they obviously take those struggles home, don't they? So it can affect a wider group of people if they're going home to their families and they're feeling, as you mentioned, they're anxious or they're not sleeping.
Absolutely. So whilst we're working with the individual, we'll look at how they are in their family and if there's issues. And we can signpost other family members into services if necessary. We have good links with Relate. So if there is some family work needed or work with a partner, we can help set that up for people.
I think kind of our mental health, there was always in the past maybe a bit of a stigma about it. You got on with it, you know, that stiff upper lip kind of British attitude. That seems to have changed completely now, and there's an awful lot of awareness about mental health. Have you noticed that people are far more receptive to the idea of coming and having a chat and maybe getting some help if they do need it?
Oh, definitely. There's a real change. And what's been really interesting with the bus, historically, it tended to be women who'd seek help for mental health. Men were less likely to. We've had a number of men who've come onto the bus and have been able to say, actually, I'm struggling a bit. I need some help. So I think definitely there's been a change in culture that people are able to talk about how they feel, how their well-being, their emotions.
Kent Online reports.
A man who's accused of running a people smuggling operation across the Channel has been arrested in East London. The 29-year-old is thought to have supplied small boats for asylum seekers to travel from France to Kent. He's wanted by authorities in Belgium and could now be extradited. Meantime, Medway Council is refusing to take on more asylum-seeking children and is considering legal action against the government. The Home Office has asked all local authorities to take part in the national transfer scheme following a rise in the number of refugee children crossing the Channel in small boats. But bosses in Medway say their services are already under pressure. It's feared a car park in Ashford could close for good after the reopening of it was delayed. This is actually one of our most read stories today. The Park Mall site has 300 spaces and was bought by the council last year. Well, businesses nearby say they're losing trade while it's shut and are worried it could be demolished to make way for housing. You can take a look at the site and see pictures from inside by heading to the story on the website. New figures seen by the Kent Online podcast show a worrying decline in the number of flying insects in Kent. The data was collected by counting the number of bugs found splatted on cars last year compared to back in 2004. Well, conservationists say the 70% drop is a huge concern, as we rely on the insects to pollinate plants that produce food. I've been chatting to Dr. Lawrence Ball, who's from the Kent Wildlife Trust.
I mean, it is concerning. We know biodiversity as a whole is declining, and we know that certainly the number of insects will have declined over the last sort of few hundred to a thousand years with human activity, although we must add the ag caveat that this is data from just two points in time. And so the more data we have going forward, the more accurate our estimations of declines will be.
And how important are those particular insects? I mean, why is it important that we try to save them?
So insects are critical to life on Earth. They're far more important than other animal groups, such as mammals and birds. They play very important roles in an ecosystem. So they are super important, as you might know, for pollination and decomposition processes. Many of our crops, from sort of tomatoes to apples, other fruiting trees, coffee, cocoa, cotton, they're all sort of pollinated by insects. So loss of this service really could be quite detrimental to the planet and sort of the human survivability of the planet.
How do we turn around this decline then? What can we all do, and what do we need to do more generally, perhaps as a county or a country, to try and reverse this trend at the moment?
So one key thing that we can do as a country is to stop using pesticides. Our habitats are already fragmented. Woodlands just exist in patches. You know, we've got urban areas, grasslands are very fragmented. And sort of on top of that, you've then got pesticides being used in these sort of intermediate habitats. And this is really detrimental to not just insects, but the whole sort of food chain and other animals. So stopping the use of pesticides is a key one. Protecting and restoring habitats is very important, so that insects can disperse and move around the landscape. We can also do things sort of individually, so we can make our gardens more wildlife friendly. There's various things you can do to encourage insects to your garden, using bee hotels, putting out sort of your waste or your compost, composting, that sort of thing is very useful, and just using native plants as well.
The bit I was interested in with as far as the research is that You do the study basically on the amount of insects that you find on car bonnets. Because I certainly remember when I used to drive down the M2 regularly, say about 10, 15 years ago, my car would be covered. And it's really not anymore. And I know Jeremy Clarkson actually spoke about it on Clarkson's farm and was talking about how much of a big issue it is and what he was doing on his particular farm to try and encourage the wildlife. But I think that's probably something that everyone can kind of relate to. If they've been in a car, they used to know how much they'd have to clean the windscreen, and they're just not doing it anymore. Is it something you want us all to keep an eye out for as well? You know, something as basic as that, as to how dirty our cars get.
Yeah, so this survey design, the idea of counting the insects that are splatted on number plates, it really came straight out of that casual observation by many of us that insects, you know, the number of insects on our windscreens has declined a lot over the last few decades. And that's really where this idea came from. By using the number plate rather than a windscreen, obviously it involves a bit less counting for us, but it's the same sample size that we use for everyone. So it's a good standardised way of counting the number of insects.
As you heard there, a new survey is underway to keep track of the data. We're being urged to get involved via the Bugs Matter app.
Kent Online reports.
At Kent Online today, you can see what more than 100 new homes along Folkestone's seafront could look like. Developers want to build a mix of 1, 2 and 3 bedroom apartments, as well as a cafe, play area and restaurant. If approved, there could also be more than 100 parking spaces for vehicles and bicycles. A Rochester company has launched a new product which aims to make flying easier and even safer. BAE Systems have developed a lightweight head-up display for use in commercial and military aircraft. Lightwave has a clear screen which sits in front of the pilot's face and gives them vital information about the plane's status. Kent's getting £3 million in funding over the next year to help victims of domestic abuse. The government grant will be used to improve welfare support arrangements and provide safe accommodation for those who escape violence. That includes investing money in refuges, home security measures and moving people to long-term houses. And finally today, a submarine which was built at Chatham Dockyard is celebrating its 60th birthday this week. HMS Ocelot remained in service for 27 years and returned to the dockyard in 1991, where it remains on display. If you visited the historic dockyard in Chatham, you may very well have been on board. Well, we've been chatting to ex-submariner Chris Reynolds, who's been telling the Kent Online podcast about his time on board and the conditions.
I joined the submarine service in 1979, and after qualifying in a different submarine, joined HMS Ocelot when she was coming out of refit at Rosyth Naval Base in Scotland in 1980. I joined as the fifth hand, which was basically the torpedo officer and the correspondence officer, and stayed with her for a year. My role basically was from the torpedo side, loading and offloading torpedoes through the torpedo loading hatch, and I was responsible for all the torpedoes and loading, etc., into the torpedo tubes. Correspondence, when the submarine had been at sea for some time, clearly you don't get mail, and as soon as we hit port, then all the bags of mail would come piling on board. So whilst everybody else went off and found their hotels, I was left on board to sort out the mail, pass it through to the various messes, and give the captain the official mail and then do all the replies, etc. required. And of course, in those days, there were no computers, so carbon paper and Snowpake were in use all the time. But on the diesel boats, you get set into a routine very quickly. And yes, you don't really notice how cramped it is, because half of the submarine will be on watch and the other half of the submarine will be off watch, and usually either watching movies or in the mess decks or in their bunks. Everyone used to complain when we got back about the smell of the crew, because the water was usually rationed, and also about the smell of the diesel. But again, we never ever noticed it. When I came back from a patrol on a diesel submarine, my wife used to make me stand in the front door, hand her over my grip of clothing, which went straight into the washing machine, and I went straight into the bath, and I was left alone there for several hours until we got the smell off.
You can also read our special report about Ocelot and see pictures of inside by heading to Kent Online.
Kent Online Sports.
Football first, and police have confirmed they're looking into violence that broke out following Gillingham's final league game of the season against Rotherham. Officers are reviewing footage from Saturday of rival fans clashing on the pitch at Priestfield. The result of that game, of course, as you have probably heard in previous podcasts, led to Gillingham's relegation from League One. And Tim Henman has been in Kent giving a tennis lesson to a 9-year-old competition winner. Sam Dennison won a private lesson with the former British number one after entering a national draw last year. The 45-minute session took place at the Deal Indoor Tennis Centre. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. You can also now get access to the ad-free Kent Online premium site by subscribing. Just head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe. And whilst you're on the site today, you can read our latest Eat My Words food review.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online podcast. This podcast is sponsored by the FG Barnes Group, with showrooms in Canterbury and Maidstone, offering a range of new and approved used cars, including MG, Seat and Vauxhall.